Thank you. Thank you, June. I'm excited to be here. This is my second time reading at the Hemingway's. I don't know why, but it's my second time. And I'm excited to, this is like a reunion. So many of my friends are in this room, and I'm excited. Also, this is the second time ever that my husband is coming long distance with me to read. So I'm gonna start by embarrassing him. And I have a poem here in my Autumn House Press book, and Where the Road Turns. I have a poem here entitled, For My Husband After So Many Years. We have been married over 35 years. Don't ask me for my age. I got married before I was born. From Lento. So this is the bed. So this is the life of the after years, of the years after. The candlelight lingers late after all these years. Someone is watching us. This journey has been so long, so if there are roses, bring them to me in a tall vase. Carnations don't do me good. And hibiscus that I miss so much don't do well in a vase. Come sit beside me like a new lover, like a lover seeking to make new the years we've held together between so many walls and so many teardrops, so many laughs and lives. It is as if we are other people from other lives, as if we have lived and lived for others who never knew how to live, as if this fire, I say this fire, my lover, husband, the father of my children, the father of the children I never had, the father of the children who returned because they hid in my womb. Sometimes my womb weeps for them. Sometimes my womb dances. Maybe my womb was insufficient for the fire they carried from the other world. Oh, my lover, my husband of so many years, I cannot count. So what was it you said when you recall how after all these years, here we are, all the other lovers lost at sea, and here we are beside the fireplace, the fire so soft. The children are growing old on us now, my darling, come, this is me, do not linger too late. I was made just for this time and you for me. We grow old. We grow old. Can you put the fire out now? I read one more from Autumn House. I brought my book for sale. I didn't know my publisher would be here. My ex-publisher, the founder of my press, will be here, and I knew he didn't want to carry books around, so I brought some books. Biography, When the Wanderers Come Home. Apparently, I ran out of ideas, and when I named my next book, I call it When the Wanderers Come Home. You see, in a proverb in Africa, I thought it was Liberian, but I heard it in Kenya and other places, they say, the child that wanders comes home only to graves. And I am one of those children, but I wrote this poem from that idea. This is where we were born, in these corrugated rugged places, where boys chasing girls, chasing boys, chasing other girls, chasing bellies, chasing babies, chasing other babies, chasing poverty, chase death. Of potholed streets and bars and sex and other girls getting drowned forever and ever in loveless love. And then the fire of our lives lit other fires of other lives with lust, and then there was no longer us. So then the war came with its bullets, chasing people, chasing the bombs, and ghost towns sprang up with carcasses of the dying and the dead. And like mushrooms, the dead rose up to claim the land, and we were no more. But the fire still burned in the wombs and in the eyes of the city streets, below which the dead lovers and love lie. And there was life again out of so much pain. And life took on its own life again. And the girls returned on the backs of surreal horses in search of that old fire. But these were no longer the same girls or boys or men or women. But this is where we were. We grew up on these sidewalk streets, in these rugged places. This is where the streets come in. This is where we belong. This is where life begins. And my book, When the Wanderers Come Home, and I was on sabbatical, and I'm a professor at Penn State Altoona. I was on sabbatical, and my sabbatical was for me to complete my 500-page memoir. And I did the book, but one of the problems I have with prose, I don't know who here writes prose anyway, but one of my problems with prose was that every time I tried writing prose, I wrote a book of poems. So I spent 3 months in Liberia and I wrote a book of poems and the memoir. But the reason I wrote a book of poems is because Liberia was no longer home to me. It was so strange. I was so traumatized that this was a different country that I began to write. But this poem is not about it. This poem is called A Room with a View. And I spent most of my year in 2014 at McGee Women's Hospital. And the first day I arrived for my surgery for uterine cancer, and they gave me an ugly room without a view. So I said, if I'm going to be here every 3 weeks doing chemotherapy, hospitalized, I'm going to be suffering, I need a room with a view. So they gave me a room with a view overlooking Pittsburgh. And I was hospitalized 7 different times, and they always knew to give me a room with a view. So I wrote this poem, A Room with a View. From my hospital room window, the city rises through sky, steel city, 3 rivers, bridges, broken and unbroken. A friend once told me how this city has more bridges than any other city. There she is. Bridges so broken, they have become only relics of the past. Outside my window, an old, old theater, where students from grade school stand in line for a visit. But my camera lens are only for the homes on the far hill. Homes I have heard to come down sliding when heavy rains overwhelm the city. But again, they rise like towers, and their owners again repossess them. This third day, 5th round of chemotherapy opens slowly with rain, fog, clouds. So the window panes in my photo reminds me that even a rainy day can be beautiful as the beauty of hard times, the beauty in the mystery of illness, the quiet of a hospital room when all you can do is reflect on the beauty of your past life through raindrops against your window glass, the beauty of homes against the distant hills, bridge upon bridge, and the warmth of my beddings reminding me that I am still here. I have a poem here called The Creation. And when Kwame Doss was looking at my manuscript, I think he thought I was crazy when he read this poem. And he said, I like it. I want to put it in a prairie schooner because I want to publish it because it's really different, you know. But it's called A Creation. I was thinking of the greatness of being a woman. The amazing womanness that we are. And I wrote this crazy poem. The Creation. Woman was made so clothes will have something to wear. So shoes will find company, hair finely braided, hanging down the shoulders of an unloose woman. A tightly fitted skirt finding knees. Some leopard suit carved out of the unyielding things. Stiff fingers sewing and sewing until fabric attaches itself to permanent skin. All the lost hours and lost sleep just so fabric can find sliding ground on the back of a woman, feeding herself on scraps of unwanted love in a city long lost to map builders. Woman was made so pavement would have feet to carry. Loads of sharp heels bare only to shoes. So feet would know the forgetfulness that comes with stepping, the forgetfulness of twisting, not just to the rhythm of new love. Woman was made so men will have trouble to fall into. Like a ditch, dug so deep, falling into it only creates deep scars in an already scarred heart. Woman was made so worry will have a place to lease, so the sun will find moon, so moon will have daylight to blame for its own disappearance, so worry will burn down the throat of some lonely man. Woman was made to put a world in places where place cannot hold earth. Woman carved cruelly out of the beauty of ugliness, out of the scarred places of pain. Beauty out of all the broken parts of a broken city where the heart has forgotten how to mend. Woman was built out of corrugated pieces of zinc, just so the earth will rebuild, so pain will forget how to be. Earth finding erectness in the small bent carved places. Where the world has been so long broken, there is no longer any unmaking. Woman was made to remake other women into hard pieces of burnt clay so that clothing we wear could talk to other clothing we can wear. Woman was made from scarred tissues of metal, from the firmness of a brick wall, iron pieces standing up at last for something. So tears will have a face to wear, so pain will have something to carry around, so the earth will find the earth to heal all the brokenness of ruin. Woman was made to unmake a man the way you unmake a face, the way you undo, to rewind the corrugated heart of a world too long broken. And I have my last poem here is called On the Midnight Train. And it's the last one. I'm sorry if I'm taking too long. I came a long way, guys. Oh. I came a long way. Okay. Four years ago, I went to AWP from here, Pittsburgh, and I took the train. And I had not taken the train for a long time. And I always fly, so I have all these airplane poems. And I was forced to write a poem because riding the train is great. I mean, you see different people and different things. It's so wonderful. So I wrote this poem. My daughter kept saying, Mommy, what are you writing? I was writing about the people around me. On the midnight train. To sit and watch the way a passenger rises from sleep, from a huddled position ready to possess the world with claws and teeth despite a moving superliner, is something to see. From Pittsburgh, it's midnight as the train drags its way out, going west. The train unyielding, twisting us side to side. 4 o'clock in the morning, the mad winds and the rain against window darkness. Baby, some devils twisting the winds in a boiling pot for tornadoes tonight. But folks getting off in Toledo are packing up now. The trains hooting, the sleeping towns swaying to the winds of things, passengers shoving, pushing, reaching for bags and shoes and blankets like people on the move. Like people who have lived an entire century on a train, people who may never know the way the other side of the tracks works. Now our car is emptying itself of those who not by will are train riders and bus riders. The girls at the front of me have decided to do the whole dress up and dress down thing right here in the aisles, in full view, between delicate rows of sweatshirt spaces, clothing tossed for hours to the abandonment of floor. The woman on the other row across from me is red hair, freckled face, and plump. Everyone here is heavy, but the red hair has strapped her crying infant to her chest. It is not out of the need of warmth or need of love for her unyielding infant that she does this. It is not out of luxury she carries her already strong-willed child at her breast. Right here, pants are rearranged on half-naked buttocks, tattoos re-examined, and the girl in front of me turns to the other girl who is fast turning into a tattoo museum. Do you want to leave this here? I hear her say. Something too small for my eyes, just inches away from me. She points to it the way you point to a gun, the way you point to a machete that's still red with the blood of your last murdered victim. It is an egg, wide eye, I tell myself, on the midnight train to Chicago. Since it takes both of them to get this unknown thing from its hiding place, the tattoo girl picks up the unknown thing. The other girl unrolls an end of their blanket, and the tattoo girl puts the thing in a fold where the other rolls it away. A chef rolls an egg roll before it hits oil and execution. They look at each other and smile and then frown, a whole new world unrolling itself before my untrained eyes, despite my third eye, where a poet can remake an entire world from just pieces of twigs. On the floor, the redhead and her baby are ready to depart the train, but there's a parcel not forgotten, but left for us, a bag of baby poop. A bag of baby poop left so I can have something to gaze at, so I can have something to write about. She knows somehow that I have come a long way just for this. Maybe she thinks I'm on a train to nowhere. On my first train ride in 10 years, a train ride just for the sheer luxury of knowing sleeplessness. This is the last smoking stop, the agent's voice drums out to us, and I wonder, last smoking stop? I replay this in my head, turning around the idea of a last smoking stop, as if a smoker preparing to die needed a last smoke before the grave. On an airplane where my own world of seat-belted folks sits like a bunch of coiled snakes, ready to bite, ready to explode, there's no last smoking stop for us. What is this, I ask myself. But everyone is filing out again, everyone dragging old duffel bags, leftover food in plastic cans. Here, everything is so real, even the ghetto finally emerges on us. Though not from the woods, but from what we have come to call city. No pretenses, no overhanging clouds, no moving winds to hide what is unreal from the real. Here, everything is raw and hard like a question. If you would pierce an arm tonight, you'd see blood, real as earth, unlike the program portfolio-toting folks on my side of the railroad tracks. Thank you.